Okay, hi everybody. This is, in a way, number 13, our esoteric astrology adventure number 13. But a little unfortunate thing happened at the end of number 12. I thought I would do two of these together in order to save time, but I was rudely awakened by the fact that the Go To Webinar will only allow me to record for an hour and a half, an hour and 45 minutes, unless there are other people attending. So, as I was simply talking to myself, I got cut off, and as a result, the conversion was not made from the very large file to a file of manageable size. So, I'm having Brett take care of that. And we will have it to you as soon as we possibly can. Hopefully, by the time you've begun with this particular number 13, it will have reached you. Now, we were in these three propositions that have been given earlier in a treatise on the seven rays. Proposition one, every ray life is an expression of a solar life, and every planet is therefore. And the solar life we discussed as being either the life of a solar logos, or in the more remote sense, the life of a constellational logos. So a ray life is, in a way, a planetary logos. That's one of the definitions of a ray life, and I think it may be the one that we need most to deal with. It can be another thing, and I will talk to you about what else a ray life can be. So, since the planetary logoi are the chakras of our solar logos, naturally every one of them would be linked with every other, as is the case for the chakras of a human being. And then every ray life or planetary logos would be animated, of course, by energy pouring into it from one of the seven solar systems, each planetary logos particularly linked with one of the major logoi in the seven solar systems, of which ours is one. Just the way we have sacred and non-sacred planetary logoi, so there are sacred and non-sacred solar logoi, and I wouldn't be at all surprised to find that, let's say, within the seven solar systems, of which ours is one, considering it as a collection of solar logoi, to find seven sacred solar logoi and a number of non-sacred solar logoi, perhaps five of them, just as there are to be, or are presently, five non-sacred planets in our solar system. So then, naturally, every ray life considered as a planetary logos would be animated by a life of a logos of one of the seven solar systems, and perhaps, who knows, maybe the non-sacred planetary logoi that we have in our solar system would be animated by non-sacred solar logoi in one of these cosmic logoses, of the kind on page 293 in a treatise on cosmic fire. Okay, just kind of reviewing a little here before we got so rudely interrupted. Every planetary life then is actuated by three streams of force. Now, actually, we're discussing the ray lives as planetary lives, coming from solar systems other than our own, one of the other six, I'm calling it, of which Sirius and Alpha and Beta Centauri and Procyon and Altair and so forth are other, we hypothesize, related solar systems. By our own solar system, naturally, a ray life or planetary logos, if they are equivalent, and they are sometimes equivalent, would naturally be animated by our solar logos and his solar system, since the ray lives as planetary logoi are, in fact, the chakras of our solar logos, yes. And animated by our own planetary life, meaning that our own planetary life sends its influence to every other planetary logos considered as a ray life. And then here we go with proposition two. Every one of the ray lives is the recipient and custodian of energies coming from, and you know, here are some of the different versions of ray lives. The seven spirits before the throne in Shambhala are ray lives. The planetary logoi are also ray lives. That's the most probable thing we're talking about, but they also are seven spirits before the throne. I really should make that. They also are seven spirits before the throne, but in this case, the throne of the solar logos. And then also even constellational chakras or great cosmic logoi can be considered ray lives. Okay, so proposition two, each one of the ray lives is the recipient and the custodian of energies coming from these seven solar systems. Now, this is where we were truncated. So each one of the solar systems is most related to one of the planetary logoi, and non-sacred solar systems would be perhaps related to non-sacred planetary logoi. And then we go on. Each one of the ray lives is the recipient of energies coming from, also, the 12 constellations, because each one of the planetary logoi is particularly related to one or other of the 12, and these are zodiacal constellations, right? Okay, let's get that up there. These are zodiacal constellations. Okay. Okay, proposition three. We got that far, huh? It was a real shock to find that the webinar had suddenly ended and no conversion was taking place. So I hope that when you went over the truncated number 12, it didn't sound too foolish. I wasn't in the middle of some kind of sentence which made it seem too ragged, but certainly that's possible. Okay, now moving on. Proposition 3, it is the quality of a ray life manifesting in time and space which determines its phenomenal appearance. So, in other words, what he's saying here, which is quite different from the way our thinkers in this day and age consider the human being, what we're saying is quality determines the nature of form, and not the other way around. Oftentimes we think that the nature of form is producing quality. There is a definition of a ray, and let's see if we can find that. Okay, I've got to spell the word definition correctly. Definition, true ray. Yeah. And this we should review, and it's in Esoteric Psychology 1. A ray is but a name for a particular force or type of energy, with the emphasis upon the quality which the force exhibits and not upon the force aspect which it creates. The quality is the inner color, inner note, inner sound, and the force aspect which it creates is a form. This is a true definition of a ray, but notice how DK is here. He doesn't say this is the one and only true definition of a ray. He says that this is a definition of a ray. So we have to be very careful about indefinite articles and definite articles when we're reading the Tibetan, because then we will know whether a definition is exclusive or whether it is one of a number of possible definitions for any item or object. All right. Going back here, we have said that quality determines the nature of the form. Okay. Whoop. All right. Quality determines the nature of the form. Proposition 3, it is the quality of a ray life, and that is one of the seven constituent colors, notes, sounds, manifesting in time and space, which determines the phenomenal appearance. By phenomenal appearance, we assume he means the appearance in the appearance in the three lower worlds. Although since our seven planes are simply part of the cosmic physical plane, which is, after all, physical in the cosmic sense, we could say in a way that anything manifesting on the cosmic physical plane is in a way cosmically phenomenal, though not systemically phenomenal. The three lower worlds hold those expressions which are systemically phenomenal. All right, and there are other of these kinds of propositions which are quite demanding and about which there are many interpretations. We'll get to them and do our best to indicate the possibilities, but not really being able to ascertain entirely what the Tibetan said or why he has put things in such puzzling languages. I suppose it's because he wants people to think, oh, for a short time, like maybe 50, 75, 100 years before delivering a truer answer to them. I think that what will happen if they think for that long is that they will learn much, much more than if he simply handed them the answer. Okay, before we penetrate further into the consideration of our theme, I would like to emphasize two points. All right, let's see what they are. First of all, that we are considering esoteric influences and not astrology per se. In other words, many hidden energies, many of which are not related to the usually considered astrological factors, and not astrology per se. Our subject is the seven rays and their relationship to the zodiacal constellations, or in other words, the interaction of the seven great lives which inform our solar system with the 12 constellations which compose our zodiac. Well, okay, but remember that the origin of the seven rays is also higher than the... all right, let's look at it this way. Seven great lives, which are beyond the status of planetary logoi, do inform our solar system through the planetary logoi. These lives are the six other major solar logoi associated with our own, and they are also, in a still more remote sense, seven great cosmic logoi, each of them having solar logoi as chakras, solar system solar logoi. And our solar logos is found in one of these cosmic logoi. I use the main reference there as a treatise on cosmic fire, page 293, that particular chart. So our subject is the seven rays coming from seven stars in our local cosmic logos, and more remotely from seven great constellations, and how these super zodiacal constellations inform the lives within, inform the 12 constellations, and also the lives within our solar system, such as the planetary logoi. Now, you know, we have a chicken and egg situation here, because the zodiacal constellations, each one of them, represent one petal in the major 12-petaled head center or crown center of the one about whom naught may be said. Now, that's a pretty high position. So sometimes you might wonder whether such a position as that in the great grand heavenly man, you know, a lot grander than our solar logos is grand, is not a dominating position. And that other constellations, say representing his solar plexus or representing his heart and so forth, are not related to those higher petals in the major head center, as the lesser centers in a human being are related to the centers in the head. So we do have a bit of a chicken and egg thing going on there. The zodiacal constellations are by no means negligible. They are very, very powerful. If they truly represent the 12 petals in the of the heart in the head center of the one about whom naught may be said, they are very powerful in their expression. I suppose what we have to do in order to get some sense of scope about this is to say, okay, well, man has 7 head centers in addition to having this immense crown center. The 7 head centers may or may not be part of the crown center. They may be found within the head. They may be controlled by the crown center. So which is more powerful in the human being? The 12 petals of our heart in the head center or our 7 head centers? And of course, the way it looks to me at the moment is that the 12 petals in the heart in the head center are more powerful than our 7 head centers. Both of them, however, are connected with Vulcan, but I do believe that the heart and the head center of the human being is more connected, with Neptune as well. I'll put it that way. For various reasons, including Neptune's major rulership in a transcendental sense of the sign Pisces, which is the 12th sign and thus related to the 12-petaled heart in the head center. All right, that was a digression, I guess. So, first of all, he tells us we are considering esoteric influences and not astrology per se. And then the next thing he tells us, that we have necessarily to study these energies and their interplay from the angle of their effect upon the planet, which is, you know, this is primary. How do these great energies of the remainder of the solar system and our solar logos and beyond our solar logos and beyond the cosmic logos, how do they affect our planet? That's the first thing. And incidentally, their effect upon the forms in the various kingdoms of nature, and particularly in connection with the fourth kingdom, the human, and with individual man, average man, the disciple, the initiate. Individual average man, we begin to look rather microscopic. Microscopic. So it would be far more important to know how these energies affect all the kingdoms in nature, and even the human kingdom, than it is to know how they affect average individual man who is isolated in his own estimation, but of course who is not isolated at all. Then what else does DK say? He said primarily it's not astrology, it's subtle energies. Secondarily, it's the planet that is important. And let's see, are there more that he says here? Yes. All right. We shall enter into no definitions in connection with technical astrology. He certainly makes plenty of definitions in relation to esoteric astrology, but none in relation to technical astrology, nor shall I use the many technical terms. These we have to learn from a study of astrology as it exists. We learn these from present astrology, which is technical in many respects. You know, we learn our trines, sextiles, sesquiquadrates, undeciles, septiles. We learn the names for the various aspects, and we learn the names of the various configurations, and that kind of thing DK is not entering into. He's not interpreting the individual horoscope, but interestingly enough, if you really attend carefully, he does say plenty about the tendency of certain types of people. He talks about these individual tendencies, and you can gather quite a bit about their character, which, of course, is what ordinary astrology tries to delineate as well. So the Tibetan makes a general statement, but sometimes there are exceptions in what he actually does, and he does give you hints that are very valuable. If in the presentation of this vast subject, and in the process of indicating the attitude of the ageless wisdom to this new and coming yet very ancient science of effective energies, as it has been called, I may present a new approach or point out an unsuspected relation, and from the standpoint of the ageless wisdom, correct what are deemed errors by the teachers on the inner side, I am hoping that some astrologers may be found who will be sensitive to that which is new. Well, I guess a few were found. He did give this out to a few of the... he gave this out in the disciples' degree, some papers. It obviously reached the students before it was collated and made into a book. And I believe he said that out of all the people he gave it to, maybe there were four that took a real interest. Four took a real interest in what he had to say. I think one of these who took an interest was Dane Rudyard, the very famous philosophical astrologer who dedicated his first impressive book, The Astrology of Personality, to Alice Bailey. Yes, he took a real interest, and there were some others. I guess not a great record, considering the value of what was presented, but when you think about it, the numbers, the numbers certainly have grown. Science of effective energies, in other words, what is effective in causing what is happening. So if we really want to know the causes of the effects which we witness in the phenomenal world, we will want to know the energies which effect and affect these causes. Would they affect the causes and bring about effects? So DK had high hopes. Now, that was 80 years ago, and today many books are written based upon his type of astrology. I am believing, says DK, that there are investigators, notice the scientific implication there, investigators along astrological lines who will be open-minded enough to recognize possible hypotheses and then to make fair experiment with them. Some of these have been found. It took a long time, however, for average professional astrologers to accept what DK has said, even tentatively, and many of them simply rejected. So we are not yet in the era when the soul has made its presence felt in an identifiable, noticeable way in the eyes of sufficient astrologers to take up this soul-centered astrology, this astrology of the soul's effect within the personality. May I repeat, he really wants to bring this out, I am not writing a treatise upon astrology. Although, given the weight and the breadth of astrological information, you could wonder why he says this, because there's just a tremendous amount about the new esoteric astrology. I'm not writing a treatise upon astrology, but one upon the seven rays and their equivalent and corresponding energies. And by that, I suppose he may mean some of the astrological energies, upon the effect of ray energy and the interplay of these energies with and their effect upon the various planetary forces, particularly those of the Earth. Well, we have to be a bit geocentric here. we have to study our own little planet and our life upon this planet, because this is where the problem lies at the moment, whether or not, regardless of the fact that the causes are in some cases very remote from other stellar sources that are out of alignment and from an earlier solar system in which not all went as it should have gone. Yes, those are causes, but they are remote. We have to study our Earth and the immediate effects and those causes about which we can perhaps do something. Okay, so the seven rays and the equivalent and corresponding energies. Planetary energies are to some extent equivalent and corresponding, and so are zodiacal energies. I am looking for those fair-minded astrologers to make due experiment. I guess we need someone with Libra and the fifth ray. Libra will make them fair-minded, and the fifth ray will allow the experimental approach. I'm looking for these fair-minded astrologers to make due experiment with the factors and suggestions which I may indicate. I wonder when he was beginning writing this whether he knew all that he would indicate. He certainly extended what he indicated farther than he may have anticipated when writing a treatise on cosmic fire. And this we see in the rays and the initiations as well, in which additional information is given beyond on the seven cosmic paths, for instance, beyond that which was given in initiation and human and solar, and beyond that which was given in a treatise on cosmic fire. He was given permission from the higher authorities to give more information. Such must have been the progress of humanity between 1925 and 1945, given that the Great War had come to a conclusion in 1945 and the Christ had stated his intention to return in his Mayavarupa, I assume, in physical form. Okay, so that made a big difference, I think. With this in mind, let us proceed. Boy, we're making rapid progress here, aren't we? We've done 28 pages. Well, a lot of this is explanatory of a larger picture, and as I've said, maybe what I'm doing in this particular presentation, which may go on for years, God willing, is to discuss occultism in general, in astrological terms. So perhaps these esoteric astrology adventures include a little more than astrology and have a lot of references to other aspects of the Tibetan's work. Okay, I have pointed out that these energies fall into three groups. Now, we have to be very attentive in noting the areas of life to which the energies apply, because sometimes he seems to say one thing and sometimes another, as in the case of constellations and signs. So let us see. Those coming from certain great constellations, which are to be found active in relation to our solar system, and which from the most ancient days have always been related in myth and legend to our solar system. So Master Moria has somewhere said that, I'll paraphrase, if it's a legend, it's the truth, that all legends are true. Of course, we have to be able to interpret the legends. To these constellations, ours is related in a peculiar way. Now, there he goes. He seems to be calling our solar system a constellation, perhaps. He seems to be calling our solar system a constellation, but he could also be calling the cosmic logos in which our solar system finds its place as a constellation. That is also possible. But, you know, be aware, as I've explained, that the terms system and constellation are, from the intellectual point of view, interchangeable because of the meanings of the words. So we have to watch DK very carefully. Is our solar system a constellation, and are our planets really stars in a way? Some research was done to show that, from the secret doctrine, that maybe Mars had once been a star. It sounds far-fetched, but I'll try to look up the reference. I think Jeremy in our Moria Federation found that reference, and it's something, you know, really amazing if true. And if it's in the secret doctrine, it's well, it's probably true. So anyway, is he calling our solar system a constellation? Or otherwise, when he defines a solar system, does he simply mean a system with one star? If a system had two stars and planets, would it be a constellation, or would it be a solar system? So this has to be worked out. Anyway, there are certain great constellations. They are extra-zodiacal. They are certainly extra-systemic, and they affect our solar system in a peculiar way. They are related to our solar system in a peculiar and important way. Well, in any case, he does define at one point a solar system as a system with a single sun. I have to find that reference for you. The more references I've collected, it seems the harder they are to isolate. There must be an easier way to do it. Anyway, most definitely he does define the solar system in that way, but he also defines it in a way which suggests that the word solar system and constellation are interchangeable. All right, so certain energies come from certain constellations, and these energies are the ones we have to study because they are affecting the Earth particularly. Those coming also from the 12 zodiacal constellations. Well, astrology has made a speciality of studying these particular types of energies. They are recognized as having a definite effect upon our system and our planetary life, and via the signs, they certainly have a particular effect upon man. Okay, and the next, those coming from the planets found within the periphery of the sun's sphere of influence. Now, there can be over 115 such planets, as he tells us in Cosmic Fire. Seven of them are sacred. Eventually, we are told 12 will be sacred. And all of these, including the influences of the asteroids and the influences of the various planetoids and moons, all of these have their influence upon the Earth. So great constellations, zodiacal constellations, and planetary influences all impact our Earth and eventually reach through our particular creative hierarchy, the fourth, and our particular kingdom, the fourth, eventually reach what the Tibetan sometimes humorously calls microscopic man. All right. Now we move on. From a certain point of view, one can generalize largely and say that these are the correspondences in the solar system to the three great centers of force which produce and control manifestation and evolutionary process in the human being. So these three sources, and it's always from a certain point of view, not from all points of view, one can generalize largely, in a large way, and say that these three sources are correspondences in the solar system to the great centers of force which are producing evolution progress in the human being. All right, let's look at this. So we have, again, the great constellations. He says there are three great constellations, Great Bear, Sirius, and the Pleiades, but actually there are more, as you'll see him listing them. the 12 zodiacal constellations as they affect life in our solar system and planet, and then the planets. Okay, so what are the correspondences of these three within our solar system? The great exterior to our solar system, and perhaps even to the zodiacal wheel, the great exterior yet controlling constellations are analogous to that center of force which we call the monad, and to its universal will to power, which is distinctive of the first divine aspect. And what he's saying here is that all monads have this will to power, or will to persist, will to power, all of them, regardless of the ray. So the great exterior constellations, are analogous to the spirit aspect and convey the will to power. That the 12 constellations of the zodiac might be regarded as embodying the soul aspect. Note the word might there. It's only from a certain point of view. Might be regarded as embodying the soul aspect, and for the present, their effect upon the individual must be regarded and should be studied in terms of consciousness and the development of the life of the soul. Now, remember what he just said earlier, that the zodiacal signs are affecting the man who lives below the diaphragm. So he's definitely, at certain points in the book, making a distinction between what the constellations do and what the signs do. The signs are tropical influences, and the constellations are stellar influences. So we're talking about the development of the soul life in relation to constellations. This, in its essence, is in essence the will to love. Now, a lot of astrological researchers have not found too much correlation with the zodiacal signs and man's behavior, but they certainly have found the correlation with the planets. So it may be that the influence of the constellations as they reach through the signs, stimulating the soul, are not found in so many human beings in a statistically measurable way. Although we are getting better at doing this, and more people are reaching soul expression, so perhaps some statistical representation of what the signs give, and through them, of course, the zodiacal constellations will be emerging. So this is the will to love. The other one was the will to power. The great external constellations, the will to power, and the will to love, the zodiacal constellations. And the third effect, the planets, 12 in number, 7 sacred and 5 non-sacred, are effective, using the word in a technical sense, in relation to the external life, environment, and circumstances of the individual. They can be, let us say, noticed, they can be measured. Let's see here. They can be noticed and measured and more easily recognized. Okay. Their impacts are measurable and discernible. To the consciousness more of average man, to the average intelligent man. Perhaps the zodiacal influences are somewhat more subtle, and it takes some soul consciousness to register them. So three great aspects, first, second, and third aspect, their force contact should be interpreted largely in terms of the human personality. Notice not fully and completely, only largely. Because, as I say, planetary influences can certainly be active in generating a soul response in the higher type of human being. It depends on which ray of the planet is involved, I think. Their force contact should be interpreted largely in terms of human personality, the third divine aspect, and thus they exemplify the will to know. So the great exterior constellations, the will to power, zodiacal constellations, the will to love, and the 12 planets, 7 sacred and 5 non-sacred, exemplifying in a large sense the will to know. And thus we have to work our way up and through from the planets and being able to somewhat control and guide their influences in our life to the zodiacal constellations and eventually to the great exterior constellations when we have passed the third degree. I'm basing that on the fact that he tells us that certain of the fixed stars are only active after the third degree, and Sirius is one of them. Well, you know, from a very mundane perspective, there can be aspects involving the star Sirius, and a person can get bitten by a dog. A very mundane effect. Sirius will be involved. But he's talking about the real and true depth of the influence involved in human life. And in that case, Sirius and the third degree are related. And of course, going beyond the third degree, when a person becomes a master of the wisdom, he's simply an entered apprentice or a first degree initiate in the lodge of Sirius. So the Sirian influence certainly continues all the way to the seventh degree, because the Christ at the seventh degree, or partially completing the seventh degree, is an initiate of a certain status on Sirius, and I guess we could say a transfigured initiate. Okay, I would have you remember that I am talking entirely in terms of consciousness. You see, the new astrology very much is the astrology of consciousness. It's not the astrology of what's going to happen to me. Me, the little artificial, non-existent, in a way, isolated center. The me that we have to get rid of through expanded consciousness. So I would have you remember that I am talking entirely, okay, in terms of consciousness and of the responses and reactions of the individual to the forces which impinge upon him. Remember, the true individual, who is the true individual? The true individual is the soul. True individual is the soul, the individualized unit. The effect of the emanation of our planet, the Earth, is a correspondence to the effect of that aggregate of atoms and molecules which we call the dense physical body, which, is, remember, is not a principle, at least in this solar system, not a principle, and of its response to the pull and the attraction of any or all of the subtler bodies. So I think what he's saying here is that the planets represent the subtle bodies, and the Earth, the dense physical body. The Earth per se, because we're carrying around with us this instrument, highly developed, but which is relating more to the moon chain and the earlier solar system than it really relates to our own second ray solar system. Okay. Let's look here. All right, so we have three great types of energies, and in our solar system, their effect is basically a first, second, and third ray effect. The exterior constellations, the zodiacal constellations, and the planets, 1, 2, 3. As regards the seven solar systems, I should suggest, more I cannot do, perhaps because of our limited capacity, but perhaps because it is not permitted at this stage to say more, I should suggest that the seven solar systems are linked up astrologically with the constellations, the Great Bear, Pleiades, and Sirius. Now, note here, he does differentiate constellations from systems. Solar systems seem to be what they conventionally are, the aggregations, planetary aggregations around a particular solar logos. Constellations are collections of solar logoi. Now, you know, Sirius, in this case, is called a constellation. So we have to ask, is Sirius, really a constellation? Or a system? Or both? Because sometimes our seven solar systems, our local systems, and Sirius is a very close, proximate system, are called, seven solar systems are called a constellation, and Sirius is found within it. So Sirius has kind of a dual role, perhaps as a constellation, perhaps as a system, and our seven solar systems are sometimes called the Sirian system. There's much to sort out there, much to clarify there. There are some veiled points which have to be unveiled. So the seven solar systems are intimately related to them. Okay. But their exact effect is a transmitted one and cannot be noted as producing noticeable results as yet upon humanity and the other kingdoms in nature. So at this point we have to ask, when DK speaks of the seven solar systems, does he mean the great constellations? C-N-S-T-L, constellations, which are, which are chakras, in the one about whom? Or does he mean actually the seven solar systems? Remember, this word system can mean something very great and constellational, or it can simply mean a solar system. The effects of the three great constellations also cannot be noted by individual man until such a time as he becomes conscious of the monadic vibration after the third initiation. So basically, DK is saying here that the seven solar systems don't have a really noticeable effect upon humanity and the other kingdoms, whether these seven solar systems are solar logoi, or whether they are great chakras, constellational chakras, in the one about whom naught may be said. These are high sources, and they have results, yes, but they are not noted. They cannot be noted as producing noticeable results. Maybe a master can notice the results, and they certainly have results, but human beings are not going to notice them. They have an effect which is transmitted via the planets, and the effects such as they have them are mediated effects and not direct effects. So, looking back here again, regarding the influence of the seven solar systems, I would say they are linked up with the Great Bear, Pleiades, and Sirius. They are either vast systems of constellations, or they are simply seven solar systems, and maybe both. Maybe this is the way he has of blinding the fact that the great chakras, and the one about whom naught may be said, are specifically related to seven solar systems in our local cosmic logos. Okay. I know it'd be nice to have some graphics on this, but I will have to leave that to others who may be interested in what I say to provide some graphics which help explain it more effectively. Then we have the effect of the three great constellations, which he just mentioned, Great Bear, Pleiades, and Sirius, and he uses the word also. They also cannot be noted by individual man until he reaches the monadic stage after the third initiation. So this is true as well of the seven solar systems. Their main influence is post or post-third degree. There are many potent influences playing upon our solar system and the planet all the time. But as far as man is concerned, his response apparatus and his mechanism of reaction remain what is called occultly unresponsive. So these influences are always there. We just don't have the mechanism to register them. They can be effective in us, but we don't notice. For they are not yet of a quality, the mechanism, the response apparatus is not yet of a quality, which will permit noticeable recognition. In other words, the consciousness of man will not notice, either in the denser, subtler vehicles, or even by the soul. So we are talking about very high influences here of the great constellations, which is not even noticed by the soul, but more by the monad. Noticed more by the monad. Later in the evolutionary process, recognition and response will come. But for all astrological purposes and recognizable produced effects, they may be regarded today as non-existent, except as they react upon the fourth kingdom in nature, the human kingdom as a whole, as it constitutes a living unit in the body of the planetary logos. Remember, what he said here is that these great sources are producing effect upon the planets, and man is considered in his aggregate as a kingdom, as an aspect of the planet. So, therefore, it is upon such a grouping as the Fourth Kingdom that some of these higher sources may have an effect. Let's see how much time we have. I don't want to get into the same position as happened last time with the webinar suddenly ending, and I am continuing to talk. Okay. As little conscious effect is produced by these forces as the effect of a high moment of contact in your morning meditation produces an effect upon the atom or cell in the little finger of one of your hands. Wow, that really puts it in proportion, doesn't it? It makes the three great constellations seem very remote. And it makes the seven solar systems, whether they are star systems or constellational systems, seem also extremely remote, very unlikely to be experienced, maybe impossible to be experienced, by microscopic man, even in his soul nature. Remember, he told us even the soul, they escape recognition by that type of consciousness focused on the higher mental plane, which we call soul consciousness, but they do not escape recognition by the monad. Okay, there may be, he says, a general response and stimulation throughout the entire body, but that's the entire body. But the intelligent atom makes no conscious response. In other words, when we meditate, a general response throughout our entire body, but the particular intelligent atom makes no conscious response, and that's what we are. We are an intelligent atom, and we make, as yet, no conscious response to these influences, except when we are becoming, in our consciousness, the monad. The vibration is of too high a character. Well, this does give us a certain sense of proportion here, doesn't it? So when we're talking about, well, how have the Pleiades influenced me today? how have I been influenced by the Great Bear and even by Sirius? We better pause and realize that even we as a soul are not really recognizing these influences, even though they are certainly there. Whoa, what does he say now? Speculation along these lines is profitless. I wonder what he would say to some of us about our speculations. Profitless? I wonder. A vast system of interlocking energies is in active and rapid circulation throughout the whole cosmic etheric body. And that could be the, well, you know, he could be talking about the entire universe or the cosmic etheric body of our cosmic logos, of consisting of seven solar systems, of which ours is one. Anyway, it's a vast interlocking network of energies. And, okay, throughout the solar system, of which our systemic etheric body is an integral part. I think what I'm going to have to do here, I've had one of those little flukes. Okay, here, we'll put that out there. All right, now we can come back. So, a vast system of interlocking energies is in rapid circulation throughout the whole cosmic etheric body, whatever its scope may be, of which our solar systemic etheric body is an integral part. Yes, our solar systemic etheric body is an integral part of a cosmic logos, as we learned on page 293 of Cosmic Fire. But speculative research along the indicated lines and the following of obscure trails is utterly futile until the main highway of approach has been constructed and followed. And that's what we're trying to do here. That's what Master DK is doing for us here, producing a main highway of approach. Okay. Just a little more time. The general outline of the astrological way is all that is possible today until the time when man can think in larger wholes and has a more synthetic capacity. Until the time when man can think. Okay. Well, in other words, when the Antikorana is built, when we are developing our abstract mind, our synthetic mind, when the Antikorana is built, and that's what we're attempting to do, we shall confine ourselves to the vast field of energies which I have outlined for your consideration, and shall consider only the major forces which are in circulation, as there are many, many more, but we can be overcome by complexity, and it will not help us. It may be interesting, but it will not help us. This will suffice for our day and generation, and I presume by that he means until he writes the third installment of the teaching, which will present new information on astrology, and which can be, according to his word, expected in 2025 and after. We are concerned with the energies which can and do evoke response, and of which man can be aware, and in many cases, I suppose, well, among initiates certainly, and among promising esoteric astrologers, is today aware. So we will follow the main points, the main energies, and not the obscure trails. But if I can be forgiven now and then for mentioning an obscure trail or two which could lead off in some very interesting speculation, perhaps it will stimulate the intuition. Okay, I think, yes, we're going to, when we take up Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 14, we will begin with the next sentence. But for the moment, we have done Esoteric Astrology Adventure 13, and today is 28 June of 2011. I hope to be able to bring some of these discussions forward in a more regular way, but takes a lot of doing, and the timing is not always in my control. So let us close as we normally do, and this time we will not be interrupted by the closing, premature closing of the webinar. We will sound the great invocation together. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Om. 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 Thank you, everyone, and we will continue with Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 3.